I crawl over to the mess I made on the floor. I pick up the smaller glass shards and I place them into a pile. I'm crying too hard to see them all. I can barely see through my tears as I grab a roll of napkins to soak up the wine from the wood floor. I hear the shower running. He's probably washing off remnants of Andrea while I wash away remnants of red wine. The tears are nothing new, but they're different this time. I'm not crying over something that never came to be. I'm crying for something that's coming to an end. I pick up a shard of the glass and scoot to the wall, leaning against it. I stretch my legs out in front of me, and I stare down at the piece of glass. I flip my hand over and press the glass against my palm. It pierces my skin, but I continue to press harder. I watch as it goes deeper and deeper into my palm. I watch as blood bubbles up around the glass. My chest still somehow hurts worse than my hand. So much worse. I drop the shard of glass and wipe the blood away with a napkin. Then I pull my legs up and hug my knees, burying my face in them. I'm still sobbing when Graham walks back into the room. I hug myself tighter when he kneels next to me. I feel his hand in my hair, his lips in my hair, his arms around me. He pulls me against him and sits against the wall. I want to scream at him, punch him, run from him. But all I can do is curl up into myself even tighter as I cry.
Quinn.
His arms are clasped firmly around me, and his face is in my hair. My name is full of agony when it falls from his lips. I've never hated it so much. I cover my ears because I don't want to hear his voice right now. But he doesn't say another word. Not even when I pull away from him, walk to our bedroom, and lock the door. Chapter 17. Then. Inseparable. That's what we are. It's been 2.5 months since I supposedly gave him a look that night at the restaurant. Even after spending every waking moment together outside of our respective jobs, I still miss him. I have never been this wrapped up in someone in my life. I never thought it was possible. It's not an unhealthy obsession, because he gives me my space if I want it. I just don't want the space. He's not possessive or overprotective. I'm not jealous or needy. It's just that the time we spend together feels like this euphoric escape, and I want as much of it as I can get. We've only slept apart once in the 10 weeks we've been seeing each other. Ava and Reed got into a fight, so I let her stay with me and we talked shit about guys and ate junk food all night. It was depressingly fun, but 5 minutes after she walked out the door, I was calling Graham. 20 minutes after she left, he was knocking on my door. 21 minutes after she left, we were making love. That's basically what it's been. 10 weeks of nothing but sex, laughter, sex, food, sex, laughter, and more sex. Graham jokes that we have to plateau at some point. But that point is not today.
Jesus, Quinn.
He groans against my neck as he collapses on top of me. He's out of breath, and I'm no help because I can't catch mine either. This wasn't supposed to happen. It's Halloween, and we're supposed to be at a party at Ava and Reed's house, but as soon as I pulled on my slutty t-shirt dress, Graham couldn't keep his hands off me. We almost had sex in the hallway near the elevator, but he carried me back inside to save our dignity. He held me to the Halloween costumes I suggested back in August. We decided to go as ourselves, only sluttier. We couldn't really figure out what a slutty slut costume of ourselves should look like, so we decided to just barely wear clothes. I have a ton of makeup on. Graham says his job is to just feel me up all night and make sure we have plenty of public displays of affection. Our clothes are on the floor now, though with the addition of a new rip in my shirt. The wait for that damn elevator gets us every time. Graham leans into me and buries his head against my neck again, kissing me until I break out in chills.
When am I going to meet your mother?
That one question rips a hole in the moment, and I feel all my joy seep out. Never, if I can pull it off. Graham pulls away from my neck and looks down at me.
She can't be that bad.
I release a half-hearted laugh. Graham, She's the one who put the word prestigious in my wedding invitations.
Did you judge me based on my parents?
I loved his parents. No, but I met them the first day we were together. I didn't even know you enough to judge you.
You knew me, Quinn. You didn't know anything about me, but you knew me.
You sound so sure of yourself. He laughs.
I am. We figured each other out the night we met in that hallway. Sometimes people meet and none of the surface-level stuff matters, because they see past all that.
Graham lowers his mouth to my chest and places a kiss over my heart.
I knew everything I needed to know the first night I met you.
Nothing external could ever influence my opinion of you, even my judgment of the woman who raised you. I want to kiss him, or marry him, or fuck him. I settle on a kiss, but I keep it fairly quick because I'm scared if I don't pull away from him, I might tell him I'm in love with him. It's right there on the tip of my tongue, and it's harder keeping it in than letting it out. But I don't want to be the first one to say it. Not yet, anyway. I quickly roll off the bed and pick up our costumes. Fine. You can meet my mother next week. I toss him his clothes. But tonight, you're meeting Ava. Get dressed. We're late. When I get my costume situated, Graham is still sitting on the bed staring at me.
What about your panties? He asks.
My skirt is really short, and any other night I wouldn't be caught dead in it. I look down at my panties on the floor and think about how crazy it would drive him if he knew I wasn't wearing anything under this already too short skirt all night. I leave them on the floor and grin at him. They don't really go with my costume.
Graham shakes his head. You're killing me, Quinn.
He stands up and gets dressed while I touch up my makeup.
We make it out the door. We make it down the hallway.
But once again, we get distracted while we wait for the elevator. You're late. It's the only thing Ava says when she opens the door and sees me standing there with Graham. She's dressed in a two-piece pantsuit, and her hair is styled like she's straight out of Stepford Wives. She waits until we're inside her house, and then she slams the door shut. Reed? She yells his name and turns to look for him, but he's standing right next to her. Oh! She tosses a hand toward Graham. He's here. Reed reaches out and shakes Graham's hand.
Nice to meet you.
Ava gives Graham the once-over, then me. Your costumes are so undignified. She walks away without looking back. What the hell? I say, looking at Reed. Why is she being so rude?
Reed laughs. I tried to tell her it wasn't an obvious costume.
What is she supposed to be? A bitch? Reed's face reddens. He leans in to Graham and me.
She's dressed up as your mother.
Graham immediately starts to laugh.
So, she's not normally that unpleasant?
I roll my eyes and grab his hand. Come on, I need to reintroduce you to my sister. Ava is actually nice to Graham the second time she meets him, but then she goes into character the rest of the night and pretends to be our mother. The funniest part is that no one at the party has any idea who she's supposed to be. That's just a secret among the four of us, which makes it even better every time I hear her tell someone how tired they look or how much she hates children. At one point, she walked up to Graham and said, How much money do you make? Then Ava said, Make sure you sign a prenup before you marry my daughter. She's so good at being our mother, I'm relieved the party is winding down because I don't think I could take another second of it. I'm in the kitchen with her now, helping her wash dishes. I thought you and Reed used to have a dishwasher. Have I lost my mind? Ava lifts her foot and points toward the mini-fridge with the glass door a few feet away. Is that a wine refrigerator? Where your dishwasher used to be? Yep, she says. But why? Downside of marrying a French guy. He thinks an ample supply of chilled wine is more important than a dishwasher.
That's terrible, Ava.
She shrugs. I agreed to it, because he promised he'd do most of the dishes.
Then why are we doing the dishes?
Ava rolls her eyes. Because your boyfriend is a shiny new toy, and my husband is enamored.
It's true. Graham and Reed have spent most of the night chatting. I hand Ava the last plate. Reed pulled me aside earlier and told me he already likes Graham more than he ever liked Ethan.
That makes two of us, Ava says.
Three of us. When we finish with the dishes, I peek into the living room and Graham is saying something to Reed that's requiring a lot of arm movement. I don't think I've ever seen him so animated. Reed is doubled over with laughter. Graham catches my eye, and the smile that appears on his face during our quick glance sends a warmth through me. He holds my stare for a couple of seconds, and then focuses his attention back on Reed. When I turn around, Ava is standing in the doorway, watching as I try to wipe the smile off my face.
He's in love with you.
Shh. I walk back into the kitchen and she follows me.
That look, she says.
She picks up a paper plate and fans herself.
That man is in love with you, and he wants to marry you, and he wants you to have all his babies.
I can't help but smile. God, I hope so. Ava stands up straight and straightens out her pantsuit.
Well, Quinn, he is very decent looking, but as your mother, I must admit that I think you can do much richer. Now, where is my martini?
I roll my eyes. Please stop.
Chapter 18. Now.
I don't know if Graham slept in the guest room or on the couch last night, but wherever he slept, I doubt he actually got any sleep. I tried to imagine what he looked like with his sad eyes and his hands in his hair. Every now and then I'd feel sorry for him, but then I tried to imagine what Andrea looks like, what she looked like through my husband's sad eyes while he kissed her. I wonder if Andrea knows that Graham is married. I wonder if she knows he has a wife at home who hasn't been able to get pregnant. A wife who has spent the entire night and the entire day locked inside her bedroom. A wife who finally pulled herself out of bed long enough to pack a suitcase. A wife who is done. I want to be gone before Graham returns home. I haven't called my mother to tell her I'm coming to stay with her yet. I probably won't call her. I'll just show up. I dread the conversation with her enough to put as much time between now and having to speak with her about it.
I warned you, she'll say.
You should have married Ethan, she'll say.
They all eventually cheat, Quinn. At least Ethan would have been a rich cheater. I unlock my bedroom door and walk to the living room. Graham's car isn't in the driveway. I walk around the house to see if there's anything I want to take with me. It feels reminiscent of when I was cleaning Ethan out of my apartment. I wanted nothing to do with him, not even the things that reminded me of him. I scour my home as my eyes fall over the years of stuff Graham and I have accumulated. I wouldn't even know where to start if I wanted to take anything. So I start nowhere. I just need clothes. When I make it back to the bedroom, I close my suitcase and zip it up. As I'm pulling it off the bed, my eyes lock on the wooden box on the bottom shelf of my bookcase. I immediately walk to the bookcase and grab the box, then take it back to the bed. I jiggle the lock, but it doesn't budge. I remember Graham taping the key to it so we'd never lose it. I flip the box over and dig my nail beneath the piece of tape. I guess I'll finally get to see what's inside of it after all.
Quinn.
I jump when I hear his voice, but I don't look at him. I cannot look at him right now. I keep my eyes downcast and finish pulling at the tape until I can pry the key loose.
Quinn.
Graham's voice is full of panic. I freeze, waiting for him to say whatever it is he needs to say. He walks into the room and sits down on the bed next to me. His hand clasps my hand that's gripping the key.
I did the absolute worst thing I could possibly do to you, but please give me a chance to make things right before you open this.
I can feel the key in the palm of my hand. He can keep it. I grab his hand and flip it over. I place the key in his palm and then close his fist. I look him in the eye.
I won't open the box, but only because I don't give a fuck what's inside of it anymore. I don't even remember the grief between leaving my house and driving over here, but I'm now parked in my mother's driveway. I stare up at it, at the huge Victorian-style home that means more to my mother than anything outside of it, including me. She'd never admit to that, though. It would look bad, admitting out loud that she never really wanted to be a mother. Sometimes I resent her for that. She was able to get pregnant, by accident, and carry a child to term. Twice. And neither of those times was exciting for her. She talked for years about the stretch marks my sister and I left on her. She hated the baby weight she never lost. On the days we were really stressing her out, she'd call the nanny she had on speed dial and she'd say, "Honestly, Roberta, I can't take this another minute. Please come as soon as you can. I need a spa day." I sit back in my seat and stare up at the bedroom that used to be mine, long before she turned it into a spare closet for her empty shoeboxes. I remember standing at my window once, staring out over our front yard. Graham was with me. It was the first time I'd ever taken him home to meet her. I'll never forget what he said that day. It was the most honest and beautiful thing he's ever said to me. And it was that moment, standing with him at my bedroom window, that I fell in love with him. That's the best memory I have inside my mother's house, and it isn't even a memory I share with her. It's a memory I share with Graham, the husband who just cheated on me. I feel like being inside my mother's house would be worse than being inside my own. I can't face her right now. I need to figure out my shit before I allow her to stick her nose in it. I begin to back out of the driveway, but it's too late. The front door opens, and I see her step outside, squinting to see who is in her driveway. I lean my head back against the seat. So much for escaping. "Quinn?" she calls out. I get out of the car and walk toward her. She holds the front door open, but if I go inside, I'll feel trapped. I take a seat on the top step and look out over the front yard. "You don't want to go inside?" I shake my head and then fold my arms over my knees and I just start crying. She eventually takes a seat next to me. "What's the matter?" It's times like these when I wish I had a mother who actually cared when I was crying. She just goes through the motions, patting a stiff hand against my back. I don't even tell her about Graham. I don't say anything because I'm crying too hard to speak at first. When I finally do calm down enough to catch my breath, all I can ask her is something that comes out way worse than I mean for it to. "Why would God give someone like you children, but not me?" My mother stiffens when I say that. I immediately lift up and look at her. "I'm sorry. I didn't mean for that to sound so heartless." She doesn't look all that offended. She just shrugs. "Maybe it isn't God's fault," she says. "Maybe reproductive systems just work, or they don't." That would make more sense. "How did you know I never wanted kids?" I laugh half-heartedly. "You said it. Many times." She actually looks guilty. She glances away from me and stares out over the front yard. "I wanted to travel," she says. "When your father and I got married, we had plans to move to a different country every year for 5 years before buying a house, just so we could experience other cultures before we died. But one crazy night, we weren't careful and it turned into your sister Ava." She looks at me and says, "I never wanted to be a mother, Quinn, but I've done my best. I truly have, and I'm grateful for you and Ava, even if it's hard for me to show it." She grabs my hand and squeezes it. "I didn't get my first choice at the perfect life, but I sure as hell did the best I could with my second choice." I nod, wiping a tear away. I can't believe she's admitting all of this to me. And I can't believe I can sit here and be okay with her telling me my sister and I weren't what she wanted in life. But the fact that she's being honest and even said she's grateful is more than I ever imagined I'd get from her. I put my arms around her. "Thank you." She hugs me back, albeit stiffly, and not like I would hug my own children if I had any. But she's here, and she's hugging me, and that should count for something. Are you sure you don't want to come inside? I could put on some hot tea.
I shake my head. It's late. I should probably get back home.
She nods, although I can tell she's hesitant to leave me out here alone. She just doesn't know what to do or say beyond what she's already said without it becoming too awkward. She eventually goes inside, but I don't leave right away. I sit on her porch for a while because I don't want to go back home yet. I also don't want to be here. I kind of wish I didn't have to be anywhere at all.
Chapter 19. Then.
I miss you. I try not to pout, but it's a phone conversation and he can't see me, so I push my lip out.
I'll see you tomorrow, he says. Promise. I just worry I'm smothering you, but you're too nice to tell me.
I'm not. I'm mean and blunt, and I would tell you to leave if I wanted you to leave. It's true. I would tell him if I wanted space, and he would give it to me without question.
I'll come over as soon as I get off work tomorrow and pick you up. Then I meet your mother.
I sigh. Okay, but let's have sex before we go to her house, because I'm already stressed. Graham laughs, and I can tell by his laugh he's thinking dirty thoughts because of my sentence. He has different laughs for different reactions, and it's been one of my favorite things, differentiating them all. My favorite laugh is in the morning when I tell him about what I dreamt the night before. He always thinks my dreams are funny, and there's a dry throatiness to his morning laugh because he's not fully awake yet.
See you tomorrow.
He says it quietly, like he already misses me. Good night. I hang up in a hurry. I don't like talking to him on the phone because he still hasn't told me he loves me yet. I haven't told him either. So when we're saying goodbye to each other, I'm always scared that's when he'll choose to say it. I don't want him to say it for the first time during a phone conversation. I want him to say it when he's looking at me. I spend the next 2 hours trying to remember what my life was like before Graham. I take a shower alone, watch TV alone, play on my phone alone. I thought maybe it would be nice, but I'm mostly just bored with it. It's odd. I was with Ethan for 4 years and probably spent 1 or 2 nights a week with him. I loved my alone time when Ethan and I were dating. Even in the beginning, being with him was nice, but being alone was just as nice. It's not like that with Graham. After 2 hours, I'm bored out of my mind. I finally turn off the television, turn off my phone, turn off the lamp. When all is dark, I try to clear my thoughts so I'll fall asleep and be able to dream about him. My alarm starts to buzz, but it's too bright, so I grab a pillow and throw it over my face. Graham is normally here, and he always cuts off the alarm for me and gives me a couple of minutes to wake up, which means my alarm will go off forever if I don't adult. I move the pillow, and just as I'm about to reach for the alarm, it cuts off. I open my eyes, and Graham is rolling back over to face me. He's not wearing a shirt, and it looks like he just woke up. He smiles and pecks me on the lips.
I couldn't sleep, he says. Finally gave up and came over here after midnight.
I smile, even though it's way too early for me to feel like smiling. You missed me.
Graham pulls me against him. It's weird, he says. I used to be fine when I was alone. But now that I have you, I'm lonely when I'm alone.
Sometimes he says the sweetest things, words I want to write down and keep forever so that I'll never forget them. But I never write them down, because every time he says something sweet, I take off his clothes and need him inside me more than I need to write down his words. That's exactly what happens. We make love, and I forget to write down his words. We've been trying to catch our breath for the last minute when he turns to me and says,
"What did I miss while you were sleeping?"
I shake my head. It's too weird. He lifts up onto his elbow and looks at me like I'm not getting out of this. I sigh and roll onto my back. Okay, fine. We were at your apartment in the dream, only your apartment was a really tiny shithole in Manhattan. I woke up before you,
because I wanted to do something nice and make you breakfast. But I didn't know how to cook, and all you had were boxes of cereal, so I decided to make you a bowl of Lucky Charms. But every time I would pour the cereal into the bowl, the only thing that would come out of the box were tiny little comedians with microphones.
Wait, Graham says, interrupting me. Did you say comedians? Like, as in people who tell jokes?
I told you it was weird. And yes, they were telling knock-knock jokes and yo mama jokes. I was getting so angry because all I wanted to do was make you a bowl of Lucky Charms, but there were hundreds of tiny, annoying comedians climbing all over your kitchen, telling lame jokes. When you woke up and walked into the kitchen, you found me crying. I was a sobbing mess, running around your kitchen trying to squash all the little comedians with a mason jar. But instead of being freaked out, you just walked up behind me and wrapped your arms around me. You said, "Quinn, it's okay. We can have toast for breakfast."
Graham immediately drops his face into the pillow, stifling his laughter. I shove him in the arm.
"Try and decipher that one, smartass."
Graham sighs and pulls me to him.
"It means that I should probably cook breakfast from now on."
"I like that plan."
"What do you want? French toast? Pancakes?"
I lift up and kiss him. "Just you."
"Again?"
I nod. "I want seconds." I get exactly what I want for breakfast. Then we shower together, drink coffee together, and leave for work. We couldn't even spend an entire night apart, but I don't think this means we live together. That's a huge step neither of us are willing to admit we took. I think, if anything, this just means we no longer live alone. If there's a difference. His mother probably thinks we already live together, since she thinks we've been dating a lot longer than we have. I've been to Graham's parents' house at least once a week since the first night he took me there. Luckily, he stopped with the fictional stories. I was worried I wouldn't be able to keep up with everything he told her the first night. His mother absolutely loves me now, and his father already refers to me as his daughter-in-law. I don't mind it. I know we've only been together 3 months, but Graham will be my husband one day. It's not even a question. It's what happens when you meet your future husband. You eventually marry him. And eventually, you introduce him to your mother. Which is what is happening tonight. Not because I want him to meet her, but because it's only fair since I've met his. I show you mine, you show me yours.
"Why are you so nervous?"
Graham reaches across the seat and puts pressure on my knee. The knee I've been bouncing up and down since we got in the car.
"I'm the one meeting your mother. I should be the nervous one."
I squeeze his hand. "You'll understand after you meet her." Graham laughs and brings my hand to his mouth, kissing it.
"Do you think she'll hate me?"
We're on my mother's street now. So close. "You aren't Ethan. She already hates you."
"Then why are you nervous? If she already hates me, I can't disappoint her."
"I don't care if she hates you. I'm scared you'll hate her." Graham shakes his head like I'm being ridiculous.
"I could never hate the person who gave you life."
He says that now. I watch Graham's expression as he pulls into the driveway. His eyes take in the massive home I grew up in. I can feel his thoughts from where I'm sitting. I can also hear them because he speaks them out loud.
"Holy shit. You grew up here?"
"Stop judging me." Graham puts the car in park.
"It's just a home, Quinn. It doesn't define you."
He turns in his seat to face me, placing his hand on the seat rest behind my head as he leans in closer.
"You know what else doesn't define you? Your mother."
He leans forward and kisses me, then reaches around me and pushes open my door.
"Let's get this over with."
No one greets us at the door, but once we're inside, we find my mother in the kitchen. When she hears us, she turns around and assesses Graham from head to toe. It's awkward, because Graham goes in for a hug at the same time she goes in for a handshake. He falters a little, but that's the only time he falters.
He spends the entire dinner as the adorably charming person he is. The whole time, I watch him, completely impressed. He's done everything right. He greeted my mother as if he were actually excited to meet her. He's answered all her questions politely. He's talked just enough about his own family while making it seem he was more interested in ours. He complimented her decor. He laughed at her lame jokes. He ignored her underhanded insults. But even as I watch him excel, I've seen nothing but judgment in her eyes. I don't even have to hear what she's thinking, because she's always worn her thoughts in her expressions, even through years of Botox. She hates that he drove up in his Honda Accord, and not something flashier. She hates that he dared to show up for his first introduction in a t-shirt and a pair of jeans. She hates that he's an accountant, rather than the millionaires he does the accounting for. She hates that he isn't Ethan. "Quinn," she says as she stands, "why don't you give your friend a tour of the house?" My friend. She won't even dignify us with a label. I'm relieved to have an excuse to leave the sitting room, even if it's just for a few minutes. I grab Graham's hand and pull him out of the sitting room as my mother returns the tea tray to the kitchen. We start in the great room, which is just a fancier name for a living room no one is allowed to sit in. I point to the wall of books and whisper, "I've never even seen her read a book. She just pretends to be worldly." Graham smiles and pretends to care while we walk slowly through the great room. He pauses in front of a wall of photos. Most of them are of my mother and us girls. Once our father died and she remarried, she put away most of the photos of him. But she's always kept one. It's a picture of our father with Ava on one knee and me on the other. As if Graham knows the exact photo I'm studying, he pulls it off the wall.
"You and Ava look more alike now than you did here."
I nod. "Yeah, we get asked if we're twins every time we're together. We don't really see it, though."
"How old were you when your father died?"
14.
"That's so young," he says. "Were you very close?"
I shrug. "We weren't not close, but he worked a lot. We only saw him a couple of times a week growing up, but he made the most of the times we did see him." I force a smile. I like to imagine that we'd be a lot closer now if he were alive. He was an older father, so I think it was just hard for him to connect with little girls, you know? But I think we would have connected as adults. Graham places the picture back on the wall. He pauses at every single picture and touches my photo, as if he can learn more about me through the pictures. When we finally make it through the sitting room, I lead him toward the back door to show him the greenhouse. But before we pass the stairs, he rests his hand against the small of my back and whispers against my ear, "I want to see your old bedroom first." His seductive voice makes his intentions clear. I get excited at the thought of recreating what happened in his childhood bedroom. I grab his hand and rush him up the stairs. It's probably been a year or more since I actually came up to my old bedroom. I'm excited for him to see it, because after being in his, I feel like I learned a lot more about him as a person. When we reach my bedroom, I push open the door and let him walk in first. As soon as I flip on the light, I'm filled with disappointment. This experience won't be the same as the one we had in Graham's old bedroom. My mother has boxed up everything. There are empty designer shoeboxes stacked up against two of the walls, floor to ceiling. Empty designer purse boxes cover a third wall. All of my things that once covered the walls of my bedroom are now boxed up in old moving boxes with my name sprawled across them. I walk over to the bed and run my hand over one of the boxes. "I guess she needed the spare bedroom," I say quietly. Graham stands next to me and rubs a reassuring hand against my back.
"It's a tiny house," he says. "I can see why she'd need the extra room."
I laugh at his sarcasm. He pulls me in for a hug, and I close my eyes as I curl into his chest. I hate that I was so excited for him to see my old bedroom. I hate that it makes me this sad to know my mother will never love me like Graham's mother loves him. There are two guest bedrooms in this house, yet my mother chooses to use my old bedroom as the storage room. It embarrasses me that he's witnessing this. I pull back and suck up my emotions. I shrug, hoping he can't tell how much it bothers me. But he can. He brushes my hair back and says,
"You okay?"
"Yeah. I don't know. Meeting your family was an unexpected quality about you. I was kind of hoping you could have the same experience." I laugh a little, embarrassed I even said that. Wishful thinking. I walk over to my bedroom window and stare outside. I don't want him to see the disappointment on my face. Graham walks up behind me and slips his arms around my waist.
"Most people are products of their environment, Quinn. I come from a good home. I grew up with two great, stable parents. It's expected that I would grow up and be relatively normal."
He spins me around and puts his hands on my shoulders. He dips his head and looks at me with so much sincerity in his eyes.
"Being here, meeting your mother and seeing where you came from and who you somehow turned out to be, it's inspiring, Quinn. I don't know how you did it, you selfless, amazing, incredible woman."
A lot of people can't pinpoint the exact moment they fall in love with another person. I can. It just happened. And maybe it's coincidence, or maybe it's something more, but Graham chooses this exact moment to press his forehead to mine and say,
"I love you, Quinn."
I wrap my arms around him, grateful for every single part of him. "I love you, too."
Chapter 20. Now.
I turn off my car and scoot my seat back, propping my leg against the steering wheel. The only light on inside the house is the kitchen light. It's almost midnight. Graham is probably sleeping because he has to work tomorrow. This morning when I woke up, I expected Graham to still be outside our bedroom door, knocking, begging for forgiveness. It made me angry that he left for work. Our marriage is crumbling. He admitted to seeing another woman. I hold myself up in our bedroom all night. But he woke up, got dressed, and traipsed off to work. He must work with Andrea. He probably wanted to warn her that I knew in case I flew off the handle and showed up at his office to kick her ass. I wouldn't do that. I'm not mad at Andrea. She's not the one who made a commitment to me. She has no loyalty to me or I to her. I'm only mad at one person in this scenario, and that is my husband. The living room curtain moves. I debate ducking, but I know from experience what a clear view it is from the living room to our driveway. Graham sees me, so there's no point in hiding. The front door opens, and Graham steps outside. He begins to head toward my car. He's wearing the pajama pants I bought him for Christmas last year. His feet are covered in two mismatched socks. One black, one white. I always thought that was a conflicting personality trait of his. He's very organized and predictable in a lot of ways, but for some reason he never cares if his socks match. To Graham, socks are a practical necessity, not a fashion statement. I stare out my window as he opens the passenger door and takes a seat inside the car. When he closes the door, it feels as though he cuts off my air supply. My chest is tight, and my lungs feel like someone took a knife and ripped a hole in them. I roll down my window so I can breathe. He smells good. I hate that no matter how much he hurt my heart, the rest of me never got the memo that it's supposed to be repulsed by him. If a scientist could figure out how to align the heart with the brain, there would be very little agony left in the world. I wait for his apologies to start. The excuses, possibly even the blame. He inhales a breath and says,
"Why did we never get a dog?"
He's sitting in the passenger seat, his body half facing me as his head rests against the headrest. He's staring at me very seriously, despite the unbelievable question that just fell from his lips. His hair is damp, like he just got out of the shower. His eyes are bloodshot. I don't know if it's from lack of sleep or if he's been crying, but all he wants to know is why we never got a dog. "Are you kidding me, Graham?"
"I'm sorry," he says, shaking his head. "It was just a thought I had. I didn't know if there was a reason."
His first "I'm sorry" since he admitted to having an affair
and it's an apology unrelated to his infidelity. It's so unlike him. Having an affair is so unlike him. It's like I don't even know this man sitting next to me. Who are you right now? What did you do with my husband? He faces forward and leans back against his seat, covering his eyes with his arm.
He's probably somewhere with my wife. It's been a while since I've seen her.
So this is how it's going to be? I thought he'd come out here and make this entire ordeal a little easier to bear, but instead, he's giving me every reason in the world to justify my rage. I look away from him and focus my attention out my window. I hate you right now. So much. A tear slides down my cheek.
You don't hate me, he says quietly. In order to hate me, you'd have to love me. But you've been indifferent toward me for a long time now.
I wipe away a tear. Whatever helps you excuse the fact that you slept with another woman, Graham, I'd hate for you to feel guilty.
I never slept with her, Quinn. We just... it never got that far. I swear.
I pause with his confession.
He didn't sleep with her? Does that make a difference?
Does it hurt less?
No.
Does it make me less angry at him?
No, not even a little bit.
The fact is, Graham was intimate with another woman. It wouldn't matter if that consisted of a conversation, a kiss, or a 3-day fuckathon. Betrayal hurts the same on any level when it's your husband doing the betraying.
I never slept with her, he repeats quietly. But that shouldn't make you feel any better. I thought about it.
I clasp my hand over my mouth and try to stifle a sob. It doesn't work, because everything he's saying, everything he's doing, it's not what I expected from him. I needed comfort and reassurance, and he's giving me nothing but the opposite. Get out of my car. I unlock the doors even though they're already unlocked. I want him far away from me. I grip the steering wheel and pull my seat up straighter, waiting for him to just go. I start the engine. He doesn't move. I look at him again. Get out, Graham. Please. Get out of my car. I press my forehead to the steering wheel. I can't even look at you right now. I squeeze my eyes shut and wait for the door to open, but instead, the engine cuts off. I hear him pull my keys out of the ignition.
I'm not going anywhere until you know every detail, he says.
I shake my head, swiping at more tears. I reach for my door, but he grabs my hand.
Look at me.
He pulls me toward him, refusing to let me out of the car.
Quinn, look at me!
It's the first time he's ever yelled at me. It's actually the first time I've ever heard him yell. Graham has always been a silent fighter. The strength of his voice and the way it reverberates inside the car makes me freeze.
I need to tell you why I did what I did. When I'm finished, you can decide what to do, but please, Quinn, let me speak first.
I close my door and lean back in my seat. I squeeze my eyes shut, and the tears continue to fall. I don't want to listen to him, but part of me needs to know every detail, because if I don't get the facts, I'm scared my imagination will make it even worse. Hurry, I whisper. I don't know how long I can sit here without completely losing it. He inhales a calming breath. It takes him a moment to figure out where to start, or how to start.
She was hired by our firm a few months ago.
I can hear the tears in his voice. He tries to keep it steady, but the regret is there. It's the only thing that helps ease the pain, knowing he's suffering too.
We interacted a few times, but I never looked at her as anything more than a co-worker. I've never looked at any woman how I look at you, Quinn. I don't want you to think that's how it started.
I can feel him looking at me, but I keep my eyes shut. My pulse is pounding so hard, I feel like the only thing that could make it stop is getting out of this claustrophobic car. But I know he won't let me until I hear him out, so I focus on breathing steadily while he speaks.
There were things she would do sometimes that would catch my attention. Not because I found her intriguing or attractive, but because her mannerisms reminded me of you.
I shake my head and open my mouth to speak. He can tell I'm about to interrupt, so he whispers,
"Just let me finish."
I close my mouth and lean forward, crossing my arms over the steering wheel,
I press my forehead against my arms and pray he gets this over with.
Nothing happened between us until last week. We were assigned to work on a job together Wednesday, so we spent a lot of the day together. I noticed as the hours passed that I was drawn to her, attracted to her, but not because she had something you didn't. I was drawn to her because of how much she reminded me of you. I have so much I want to scream at him right now, but I hold back.
Being around her all day Wednesday made me miss you, so I left work early, thinking maybe if I just took you out for a nice dinner or did something to make you happy, you would smile at me like you used to. Or you'd be interested in my day. Or me. But when I got home and walked through the front door, I saw you walking out of the living room. I know you heard me opening the door, but for some reason, instead of being excited to see me come home an hour early, you went to your office so you could avoid me. I'm not only full of anger now, I'm also full of shame. I didn't think he noticed all the times I try to avoid him.
You spoke one word to me Wednesday night. One. Do you remember what it was?
I nod, but I keep my head buried against my arms.
Good night.
I can hear the tears in his voice when he says, I was so angry at you.
Figuring you out is like a fucking riddle sometimes, Quinn. I was tired of trying to figure out how to be around you the right way. I was so mad at you I didn't even kiss you goodbye when I left for work Thursday.
I noticed.
When we finished up the project on Thursday, I should have come home. I should have left. But instead, I stayed. And we talked. And I kissed her.
Graham runs his hands down his face.
I shouldn't have done it. And even after it started, I should have stopped it, but I couldn't. Because the whole time I had my eyes closed, I pretended it was you.
I lift my head off my arms and look at him.
So, it's my fault. Is that what you're saying?
I turn my whole body toward him in my seat.
You don't get the attention you want from me, so you find someone who reminds you of me? I guess, as long as you pretend it's your wife, it shouldn't count.
I roll my eyes and fall back against my seat.
Graham Wells, first man in the world to find an ethical way around an affair.
Quinn.
I don't let him speak.
You obviously didn't feel very guilty if you had the entire fucking weekend to think about it, but then went back to work and did it all over again.
It was twice. Last Thursday and last night. That's it. I swear.
What if I wouldn't have caught on? Would you have even stopped it? Graham runs his hand over his mouth, squeezing his jaw. His head shakes a little, and I'm hoping it's not an answer to my question. I'm hoping he's just shaking it in regret.
I don't know how to answer that, he says, looking out his window. Nobody deserves this, especially you. Before I left tonight, I swore to myself that it would never happen again. But I also never believed I would be capable of something like this to begin with.
I look up at the roof of the car and press my palm to my chest, blowing out a quick breath.
Then why did you do it?
My question comes out in a sob. Graham turns to me as soon as I start crying. He leans across the seat and grips my face, silently pleading for me to look at him. When I finally do meet his desperate stare, it makes me cry even harder.
We walk around inside that house like everything is okay, but it's not, Quinn. We've been broken for years, and I have no idea how to fix us. I find solutions. It's what I do. It's what I'm good at. But I have no idea how to solve me and you. Every day I come home hoping things will be better. But you can't even stand to be in the same room with me. You hate it when I touch you. You hate it when I talk to you. I pretend not to notice the things you don't want me to notice because I don't want you to hurt more than you already do.
He releases a rush of air.
I'm not blaming you for what I did. It's my fault. It's my fault. I did that. I fucked up. But I didn't fuck up because I was attracted to her. I fucked up because I miss you. Every day I miss you. When I'm at work, I miss you. When I'm home, I miss you. When you're next to me in bed, I miss you. When I'm inside you, I miss you.
Graham presses his mouth to mine. I can taste his tears, or maybe they're my tears. He pulls back and presses his forehead to mine.
I miss you, Quinn.
so much. You're right here, but you aren't. I don't know where you went or when you left, but I have no idea how to bring you back. I'm so alone. We live together, we eat together, we sleep together, but I have never felt more alone in my entire life.
Graham releases me and falls back against his seat. He rests his elbow against the window, covering his face as he tries to compose himself. He's more broken than I've ever seen him in all the years I've known him. And I'm the one slowly tearing him down. I'm making him unrecognizable. I've strung him along by allowing him to believe there's hope that I'll eventually change. That I'll miraculously turn back into the woman he fell in love with. But I can't change. We are who our circumstances turn us into.
Graham.
I wipe at my face with my shirt. He's quiet, but he eventually looks at me with his sad, heartbroken eyes. I haven't gone anywhere. I've been here this whole time. But you can't see me because you're still searching for someone I used to be. I'm sorry I'm no longer who I was back then. Maybe I'll get better. Maybe I won't. But a good husband loves his wife through the good times and the bad times. A good husband stands at his wife's side through sickness and health, Graham. A good husband, a husband who truly loves his wife, wouldn't cheat on her and then blame his infidelity on the fact that he's lonely. Graham's expression doesn't change. He's as still as a statue. The only thing that moves is his jaw as he works it back and forth. And then his eyes narrow, and he tilts his head.
You don't think I love you, Quinn?
I know you used to, but I don't think you love the person I've become. Graham sits up straight. He leans forward, looking me hard in the eye. His words are clipped as he speaks.
I have loved you every single second of every day since the moment I laid eyes on you. I love you more now than I did the day I married you. I love you, Quinn. I fucking love you.
He opens his car door, gets out, and then slams it shut with all his strength. The whole car shakes. He walks toward the house, but before he makes it to the front door, he spins around and points at me angrily.
I love you, Quinn.
He's shouting the words. He's angry, so angry. He walks toward his car and kicks at the front bumper with his bare foot. He kicks and he kicks and he kicks, and then pauses to scream it at me again.
I love you.
He slams his fist against the top of his car over and over until he finally collapses against the hood, his head buried in his arms. He remains in this position for an entire minute. The only thing moving is the subtle shaking of his shoulders. I don't move. I don't even think I breathe. Graham finally pushes off the hood and uses his shirt to wipe at his eyes. He looks at me, completely defeated.
I love you, he says quietly, shaking his head. I always have, no matter how much you wish I didn't.
Chapter 21. Then.
I never ask my mother for favors, for obvious reasons. Which is precisely why I called my stepfather to ask permission to use his beach house in Cape Cod. He only uses it as a rental property now, and it stays booked up in the summers. But it's February, and the house has been sitting empty for most of the winter. It took a lot to swallow my pride and ask him, but it was a lot easier than if I'd asked her. She has stated numerous times since she met Graham that she thinks I could do better. In her eyes, better means meeting someone with his own beach house, so that I'll never have to ask to borrow theirs for the weekend. Graham walked around for an hour after we got here, pointing things out with the excitement of a kid on Christmas morning.
Quinn, come look at this view.
Quinn, come look at this bathtub.
Quinn, did you see the fire pit?
Quinn, they have kayaks. His excitement has waned a little since we got here earlier today. We just ate dinner and I took a shower while Graham built a fire in the fire pit. It's an unusually warm day for a February in Massachusetts, but even on a warmer winter day, it barely tops out in the 50s during the day and the 30s at night. I bring a blanket to the fire pit with me and curl up next to Graham on the patio sofa. He pulls me even closer, wrapping an arm around me while I rest my head on his shoulder. He tucks the blanket around both of us. It's cold, but the warmth from both him and the fire make it bearable. Comfortable, even. I've never seen Graham more at peace than when he's out here, listening to the sounds of the ocean. I love how he looks out over the water as if it holds all the answers to every question in the world. He looks at the ocean with the respect it deserves.
"What a perfect day," he says quietly.
I smile. I like that a perfect day to him includes me. It's been 6 months since we started dating. Sometimes I look at him and feel such an overwhelming appreciation for him. I almost want to write thank you notes to our exes. It's the best thing that's ever happened to me. It's funny how you can be so happy with someone and love them so much. It creates an underlying sense of fear in you that you never knew before them. The fear of losing them. The fear of them getting hurt. I imagine that's what it's like when you have children. It's probably the most incredible kind of love you'll ever know, but it's also the most terrifying. "Do you want kids?" I practically blurt the question out. It was so quiet between us, and then I sliced through that quiet with a question whose answer could determine our future. I don't know how to do anything with subtlety.
"Of course. Do you?"
"Yeah, I want a lot of kids."
Graham laughs. "How many is a lot?"
"I don't know. More than one? Less than five?" I lift my head off his shoulder and look at him. I think I would make a great mom. I don't brag on myself, but if I had kids, I'm pretty sure they would be the best kids ever.
"I have no doubt."
I lay my head back on his shoulder. He covers my hand that's pressed against his chest.
"Have you always wanted to be a mom?"
"Yes. It's kind of embarrassing how excited I am to be a mother. Most girls grow up dreaming of a successful career. I was always too embarrassed to admit that I wanted to work from home and have a bunch of babies."
"That's not embarrassing."
"Yes, it is. Women nowadays are supposed to want to amount to more than just being a mother. Feminism and all that." Graham scoots me off his chest to tend to the fire. He grabs two small logs and walks them over to the fire pit, then reclaims his seat next to me.
"Be whatever you want to be. Be a soldier if you want. Or a lawyer, or a CEO, or a housewife. The only thing you shouldn't be is embarrassed."
I love him. I love him so much. A mom isn't the only thing I want to be. I want to write a book someday.
"Well, you certainly have the imagination for it, based on all the crazy dreams you have."
"I should probably write them down," I laugh. Graham is smiling at me with an unfamiliar look on his face. I'm about to ask him what he's thinking, but he speaks first.
"Ask me again if I want kids," he says.
"Why? Are you changing your answer?"
"I am. Ask me again."
"Do you want kids?" He smiles at me.
"I only want kids if I can have them with you. I want to have lots of kids with you. I want to watch your belly grow, and I want to watch you hold our baby for the first time, and I want to watch you cry because you're so deliriously happy. And at night, I want to stand outside the nursery and watch you rock our babies to sleep while you sing to them. I can't think of anything I want more than to make you a mother."
I kiss his shoulder. "You always say the sweetest things. I wish I knew how to express myself like you do."
"You're a writer. You're the one who's good with words."
"I'm not arguing about my writing skills. I could probably write down what I feel for you, but I could never put it into words verbally like you do."
"Then do that," he says. "Write me a love letter. No one's ever written me a love letter before."
"I don't believe that."
"I'm serious. I've always wanted one."
I laugh. "I'll write you a love letter, you sappy man."
"It better be more than a page long. And I want you to tell me everything. What you thought of me the first time you saw me. What you felt when we were falling in love. And I want you to spray your perfume on it like the girls in high school do."
"Any other requests?"
"I wouldn't be opposed to you slipping a nude pic in the envelope."
"I can probably make that happen." Graham tugs me onto his lap, so that I'm straddling him. He pulls the blanket over us, cocooning us inside of it. He's wearing a pair of cotton pajama pants, so I get a clear sense of what he's thinking right now.
Have you ever made love outdoors in 30-degree weather before?
I grin against his mouth.
Nope. But funny enough, that's precisely why I'm not wearing any underwear right now.
Graham's hands fall.